Okay, Assalamu alaikum.
This is
Tanya at G4. We've called this series Wide Open because we're going in whichever, you know, we're sticking to the path, but we're, you know, going off a little bit when we feel that that's worth doing. We're up to chapter Gimel. So in chapter Aleph, in chapter 1, we introduced what the Rebbe called the Nefesh HaChiyunis, the life-giving soul, also sometimes known as the Nefesh Bahamas. That basically is what gives you animation. It's in the blood. We said just like an electric charge is held within the battery acid in a battery, the actual liquid of the acid, so too the Nefesh HaBahamis is within in the blood in the same way, mamash in the same way. So is it physical? Not really. Is it spiritual? Kind of. Like it's really in the middle. It's the link between physicality and spirituality. It's the gas of the daka, the daka of the gas. It's the coarse of the refined and the most refined of the coarse. That's what they refer to it as. And it's just hell bent on being. It just wants to be. It wants to live. Which really the more premium of what it wants is pleasure. But pleasure, we'll talk about that today, B'zvat Hashem. Pleasure's a big topic, and it's a little more nuanced and maybe complex than what we maybe thought in the past. So it wants pleasure, let's say, but really we'll say it wants to live. It wants to be. And so once you've got your survival taken care of, and you're not having to fight for food and shelter, etc., well, how does that express itself? And all you need to do is just go onto the internet for 5 minutes, and you'll see exactly how that expresses itself when you have all of your essentials taken care of. Yeah, this crazy proliferation of, everything online. Everything online is about the Nefesh HaBahamis trying to become bigger and stronger and more recognized and comparatively bigger, etc., etc. That's just the same thing. Just once you've had the...
Is that the animal soul you're referring to?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the animal soul?
That's the animal soul. They call the animal soul, yeah. So that's something that we're connected to. We have one of them. And it's looking to get bigger and stronger and better, etc. Acquire, be recognized. Then we introduce the godly soul, yeah, which maybe we'll call the neshama. He calls it here the nefesh lekis, and we broke it down. It's more complicated. There's more parts to it. It's got a structure to it. We haven't explained what it wants yet. We're going to explain what it wants much later on. Really, what it wants is just to go back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a chelek elokai mimal, it's a piece of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that's what it wants. It just wants to go back, which means it wants to become nullified back into Hashem, just like a match. If you strike a match, you have a big bonfire in front of you, and you throw the match, the lit match, into the bonfire. Well, what happened to the fire? What happened to the fire on the match? Did it go out?
Consumed.
Yeah, you can't really say it went out. It didn't go out, but is it there anymore? It's not there anymore. Yeah, that's the tithe of the Nefesh HaKis.
Fire's never there anymore. Any fire's never there anymore. Same fire.
Yeah, so always. Say that. But the imagery of it, anyway, the imagery. It looks like a separate fire. That's a really good point. So its desire is the exact opposite. The desire of the Nefesh HaBahamis is to become more and to define its boundaries and borders, to build up its perimeter wall higher and stronger, etc. Yeah, and the desire of the Nefesh HaKis is the exact opposite. It just wants to merge back into reality and have nothing to do with this delusional world. That's the fight. That's the fight. The fight is not against internet porn. Yeah, the fight is not against being horrible to your wife. The fight is not against overeating. The fight is not against fill in the blank. that's just what the fight appears to be against. The fight's against this perimeter wall. So you have to now work out how is it my addiction to this, and this, and the fact that I keep screwing up in this, and this, and I think I've got all these endless avoiders to take care of. Yeah. How is it that that's really just the manifestation of this need to be, which is really in a deeper sense this desire for pleasure, but it comes before it's the pleasure, it's the need to be. So I think we said this, but Descartes famously said, although I don't think he actually said it, I think therefore I am. Yeah, but the according to Tanya, the way I understand it is you would say, I experience pleasure, therefore I am. When you're experiencing pleasure, you never exist more than that. Yeah, that's why when we're with our wives, the ultimate selfless act of bringing a child into the world happens with the most intense pleasure, because it's only at that, that's a big thing, but that you need such selflessness at that moment. So therefore, the only way of such selflessness is when it's mixed up with your intense sense of self. That's when you can be the ultimately selfless. When your sense of self, meaning the ultimate level of pleasure, is so in your face and so activated. So it's necessary. There's much more to it than that, but that was a good point. Okay, so we spoke a little bit about the idea of the lavush of the nefesh of Bahamas, of the nefesh of Kis. This idea of a interface between the soul and the world, how it does mitzvahs, etc. We just spoke about the lavush, and we said that there's the idea, without getting into the details, we said that you can have a sensitive garment, or you can have a coarse garment, yeah? So your movements are restricted when you're wearing a coarse garment.
Is that like your personality?
That's one of the things. It's really machshava. This what we're talking about here, machshava. But that's a big subject in itself. But personality is for sure part of your lavush. You could say anything that you have is part of your lavush, as opposed to what you are. And we've just been given a massive schus in our generation, in the past few months, to be blessed with AI. Because AI now is letting us understand that you're not a seichel. You have a seichel. That's not what you are. That's amazing. That's really amazing. For the first time in the world, in reality now, we can say without question, I'm not a seichel. Why? Because they created one. They made a seichel, a disembodied seichel. So we spoke about this lavush. Lavush is the idea of how you interface with something else. You could call it a filter, maybe. Yeah? But you can't interface with something else without a lavush. To just throw something out there is etzem, essence, is not experiential, not experienceable. You can't experience. You can't experience essence. Essence is beyond experience. You can't experience someone's essence. Why? Because how do you experience stuff? See, we're so caught up in the Western world of like experience that we can't even entertain the thought that something could be too heilig for experience. And we're just looking for that you know, the eyes closed and the eyes rolling back, that, you know, that merged into oneness experience, yeah? That's all clay, a goof. All of that stuff is all to do with the goof. Yeah? Real reality is beyond experience. So then you're like, well, what does that mean? Yeah? So you have to, if once we start getting purer and purer and we stop looking at the world in context of us, yeah, then that will start to make more and more sense. But it shouldn't make sense until we've actually moved much, much closer to that idea of we're just a feature in the game. The game's not about us. And then you can quite happily deal with the fact that it's not about experience. And that will also open up the doors to real shalom bias as well, by the way.
Would it be accurate to say that the slow motion in Parak Bey's is just like your guff? That's not your nefesh bahamas.
It's just like what?
It's your guff. Like everything that's not your nefesh bahamas and your nefesh elokis is your guff. Whatever the seichel included. Is that what that levush is?
Is it the goof? Well, goof is a relative term, so you could say that, but it doesn't help much in that. There's what's panimi and chetzoni. So whatever is motivating something, that's called the soul, and what's being motivated is called the goof. So that happens on many levels. So for example, your relationship to your wife is neshama and goof. Yeah, that's zocha nekeva. You're zocha, she's nekeva. But her relationship to the kids, she's zocha, they're nekeva, if things are going right. Yeah? And then your relationship of your oldest child to the younger children, again, he was nekeva lagabe your wife, but now he's zocha lagabe his younger siblings. So it's all relative. So guf neshama is always a relative term. It's like all kalim. It's the kalim of the higher level is the awe of the lower level. With me? So it is, but it doesn't really help because there's so many madrigas there. So we explained that lavouche was to do with thinking processes, and that was dependent the sensitivity of that lavouche, yeah, is dependent on the kedusha by which we're with our wives when we bring the neshama down, okay? And kedusha means, for what we are saying here, it means unity and transparency, which would mean we're with our wives and it's about our wife. One thing that Rav Manis said that I didn't know how Moedic it was until after hearing it many, many times, was this idea, excuse the crudeness of what I'm about to say, but the idea of what a man will say to his wife after the ma'aseh was, how was it? Yeah? That is usher to say, legamrei, it. There's you and your wife. There's no it.
The act itself is not it.
There's no act.
I'm saying the act is not it.
So people, but in a real, in a holy mind, there's no act.
Right.
There's just the wife. There's just you coming together with your wife. That's it. It's a very important thing to erase that phrase from your vocabulary. That phrase shouldn't exist because that's bringing, there is no emtsai between us and our wives. No emtsai. People with me? Okay, excuse the crudeness. Okay. So now we join you, Perek Gimel. So the Rebbe really explained where the Nefesh Elokis comes from. Yeah? That was really what he said. And he gave another couple of other elements as well. But that was chapter 2, where the Nefesh Elokis comes from. Now the Rebbe switches gears and he explains what the nefesh is made of. What constitutes its body, yeah, so to speak. Remember, everything has a body and a neshama. Everything. Everything, and if it exists, it has a goof and neshama. So now we're going to be learning about the goof of the nefesh lekis. So it comes from this highest place called Chochmelah, whatever you want to call it, or even higher maybe, manifest in Malchus Atzilus, in the Shechina, if you want to call it that, Knesset Yisrael, and then it comes down through the other Ulamas, and it starts to pick up form, yeah? It picks up an intellect, it picks up emotions, and then finally when it lands here, it picks up behavior as well. That's the final, that's like the Makabah Partish of its surah. So you have, and this is, it's really important to get this like in your mind clear, and obviously remember not to talk about physicality, but the nefesh has a body, it has clothing, and it has a soul, okay? And it breaks down even more. The soul has a soul, yeah, you might call that Ratzon. And what's the soul of Ratzon? Meaning what's that we said, neshama guf, if Ratzon is the goof, what would be the neshama of Ratzon? What would that be called?
Tainuk.
Huh? Tainuk. Oineg. Yeah, pleasure motivates Ratzon. What do you want? What gives you pleasure? But let's scratch that. Let's scratch that term. This is really, really helpful. We always refer to something as giving us pleasure. Yeah? Scratch that term and use the term X touches my pleasure. That's really a very profound paradigm shift. Chocolate does not give you pleasure. There's no pleasure in chocolate. Chocolate touches your pleasure. Even to call it your pleasure is a concession, because that's really you. Yeah, but just because we don't relate to ourselves on such a foundational level, if a person really related to himself as his pleasure, he would be a psychopath and a narcissist. It's good that we don't relate to ourselves on the animal side, on the human side. If you really related to yourself as the essence of what you are on the human, on the mortal side, on the created side of things, yeah, then that would be very, very bad news for you and for everybody around you as well. Yeah, why? Because then you would take your sense of pleasure so ultimately seriously that it would be mevatel everything else. So that accounts for people like Ted Bundy, Yimach Shamoy, and any other serial killer rapists, etc. Their sense of pleasure was so real to them that it nullified everything else. Everything else. So we don't want that. So it's good that we say it's our pleasure as opposed to that's me. We have pleasure. But the mechanics of it is that there's pleasure, the pleasure of the soul. But again, it's not pleasure of the soul. There's no real way of saying it. That's the soul. That's really what the soul is. And then that now becomes manifest into Ratzon. Yeah? Because pleasure by itself just kind of wants to hang out. It doesn't need anything. It doesn't want to go anywhere. It's contained. Yeah?
What's drive?
You know what I'm saying,
What's drive?
Drive, that would be Ratzon. So you can't really separate pleasure and Ratzon. But we do, like when we talk, because we talk very technically in certain places, very, very technically in certain places of Tanya, it's very helpful. But we really just call it Ratzon. That's why I was even like a little bit, you know, masupa whether to even speak about so much about pleasure. But really, there's pleasure is panemi and Ratzon is chitsoni. Ratzon is pleasure going outward. That's like I now want, that the pleasure is going out to get what it wants. Yeah? So now, pleasure goes out through Ratzon. Ratzon is a chaotic energy that is neither good nor bad. At the level of Ratzon, there is no, it's just energy. It's like, is electricity good or bad? It depends what you're gonna plug it into. Yeah? It can go either way. So Ratzon is a chaotic energy. What does Seichel do? Our intellect. What does the Seichel do with Ratzon?
Controls the Ratzon.
It's a good, that's true, it's a really good word for it.
Channels.
Even that's better.
There's filter.
Strategy.
Direct.
What?
Strategy.
Getting there.
Channels.
It's all, you're all good, you're saying right, but I found the most helpful word is it orders it. It orders the energy. That's what Seichel is. Seichel is Masadeh. That's what Seichel does.
It puts it in order.
Seichel just is Masadeh stuff. Seichel's Masadeh. Yeah?
It makes sense out of everything.
Yeah, it's Masadeh, exactly. It orders. Absolutely. That's what it does. It works out the first, the second, the third. It structures it.
Is there an Ashana to Tainug, or that's the highest level that we're going to talk
about? Maybe just call that Amunah. Maybe just call that Hashem himself. Depending if you're talking about the Neshama, if you're talking about the Nefesh Bahamis, you might call that the Chalal Panui. Or the Makom that got left from the Shvira. So now, once this chaotic energy comes down from Ratzon, now it goes into our mind, and the mind orders it, and now it will, it's called give birth to emotions. you'll have emotions towards the idea, and then emotions need to express themselves through behavior. Okay? So I'm gonna draw this down.
This is really helpful for us to cut. Because if you cut this, like really, really deeply, you're so beyond any psychologist that I know of, that I can imagine. It's so beyond, if you really cut this deeply. So at the very top of the whole, you have Oyneg, yeah? Now this, you could say, goes out through Ratsan. Okay? Now Ratsan gets ordered through Seichel. And now Seichel gives birth to Midas, and now Midas expresses itself through Levushin, which we translate as behavior. That's thought, speech, and action. That's a really helpful thing to know very deeply. Okay, so if you're going to group any together, we'll group these two together, Oyneg and Ratsan, you'll group together. Seichel and Midas are very separate. What would be here? What lives in between Seichel and Midas? Anyone can think? This is a very important thing to know.
Action.
Deeper.
No. What's Mechaber Seichel to Midas?
Das.
Thank you.
So
is Das a function of the Seichel or a function of the Midas?
Oh.
Yes. Yeah. Das is really, I mean, we talk about it as of the Seichel, but that's the reason why we have, one of the reasons why we have four arms and the tefillin and the on the head, because Das is Koilel, Ava, and Yira. So you really each have three, Chochma, Bina, Das, but we have four to hint to the fact that within Das, we'll explain what Das is, but well to show. Within Das, you have Ava and Yira, Nichlal in Das. Okay? So once we really understand this, like very, very deeply, it puts us in such a strong position to be a nice person. It's amazing. And to not be a Baltiva, and to not be caught up in, to not be pulled this way and that way, to not procrastinate, to really work hard and to learn. And to, you know, to help. All, this is the key to the whole thing. It really is. It's like just
Levushim is Machshava. What's the difference between the Machshava and Levushim and the Machshava and the Seichel?
Okay, good. So let's learn by it. Okay. So now the Rebbe introduces the Seichel, where he explains that there's 10 spheres. You everyone's heard of the 10 spheres? Yeah, from Kesed to Malchus, from Chochmah to Malchus. Chabad doesn't really talk about Kesed so much, but we're not going to go there. But the Tanya brings that he's going to be speaking about Nefesh Lakis, but this structure, this system, is a mirrored system for the Nefesh Bahamas as well. It's the system of a soul. There are differences, yeah, but the differences are details, yeah. But the big picture is the same thing. So everything in reality works through the 10 spheres, yeah. The 10 spheres are the interface, so to speak, what Hashem uses to create and control the world. They're like filters in a sense. I have such a tiver to explain something. I don't know if it's the right thing to explain.
Let it out.
What? You say that now, 20 minutes from now, I don't know if you're the same thing.
What did your dad say?
That's a good question. I had that in my... I quit photography this week. I made a retirement party. I stopped being a photographer this week.
Wow. I've done it for...
I've been doing it for like over 20 years. So I had to make like a hard line, you know, hard stop. So I made a party at my house, like for all the photography people I knew. And the Shabbos before, I had a guy come to my house who's like, he's a photographer I know very well, a close friend of mine. He's very contentious. He likes to, you know, he's contentious. And so he's sitting at the table and I told him, you know, he knew I'm throwing this party yesterday. And he was like, you know, are you sure you should be, you sure you should quit? You sure? And then he started saying something different to everyone else. He's like, but you know, you make such a kiddush Hashem when you're taking pictures. You know, you talk to everyone. And you're like, you know, you're, like it's such a kiddush Hashem. You meet so many different people. And I said to him, you know what? I didn't make the decision with thought. So yeah, I know. If I was making the decision through thought, yeah, then this would go on and on and on and on and on. But this decision wasn't made through thought. I'll tell you a nice story.
You fire sale your camera equipment.
That's the... I'm giving it, yeah. I'll keep my cameras, but I'll give the rest of it.
In the mikvah.
Put in the mikvah. So, this is a very nice story. That I got a kiddush cut for my wedding. I've been married nearly 20 years. And my kiddush cut, you know, we have a lot of kids. And this was like last year, year and a half ago, whatever. It's been, you know, it's been through the washing machine, you know. We lost the plate. It was when I bought it, it was Mama's beautiful kiddush cup. And it kind of jiggles around and it's all kind of bent and whatever, you know. And I was actually at the table with this guy that was, I was just talking about. And I think it was Yom Tov, I can't remember. I think it was Yom Tov. And I poured a wine. There's a whole bunch of people at my table. And I just look at this little Nebuch cup. I'm like, boy, I think I said it inside. Can you kiddush cup, please? And I never had anything like this in my life before. Yeah, he answered me yes. Not with any words or sound. Just every fibre in my body knew that that tefillah had been this kabbal. So if it wasn't a bunch of people there, I would have started to cry and say, and I started to say thank you. As if I had a new cup. We can't even relate to this because we're so caught up in thinking that if you ever had such a thing, you would start analyzing and thinking, and then before you know it, you couldn't try. It was so profound that I would have cried if there weren't people around, and I just started to say thank you as if I'd had a new cup. That was how much I knew. And I knew that I had a new cup. Like, it's just a matter of time now until Hashem sends me a new kiddush cup. And then by Parshas Miketz, which was a few months later, by Parshas Miketz, out of nowhere, someone bought me $1,000 kiddush cup. Yeah?
With the plate.
Miketz was the parsh with the kois. Slicha. Hashem, he made it special. I'm saying, we have to admit, we're so caught up in thinking that we can't imagine that there could be a knowledge beyond thinking. Yeah? There really can be. B'zvat Hashem, we'll all know of it very soon. That's my little... Oh, that's a shame. It's not a shame. But in the meantime, what we can do is try to work on toning down the thinking. And you know what the first most essential step in slowing down the speed and the intensity of your thinking is? The first most essential step, without any, no question whatsoever, is get a phone like that. Sorry to make everyone feel uncomfortable, but it's worth it. It's really worth it.
That's a safe zone. We're good here.
Yeah.
Nobody has a phone in this
room. Yeah. Oh, I'm the only one with a phone. Yeah, I just don't see how it's possible with those. I do understand how essential they are, etc. But and then people will say, I got a kosher one and all I have is Waze and WhatsApp. And I'll be like, Waze is fine. WhatsApp's the worst thing you can have. WhatsApp is the worst. And you're just like, yeah, I just got WhatsApp. You're like, oh man, I'm finished. Done. It's like, that's it. Game over. But now, Hashem threw us a rope that you can get WhatsApp on your computer, on your desktop. So you can actually still live in 2024. And, you know, you can still live and not.
Why were you saying that about the WhatsApp before the computer end? Well, mm-hmm. Why were you saying that? Why do you say, like, that's it with the WhatsApp?
Because how do you operate with that thing in your pocket? Your mind is going like this in every direction.
Because a regular phone also, a smartphone, or a
dumb phone also has text messaging, right?
Not this. Yeah, that's another thing that's very dangerous. Text messaging is. I had a client one time, yeah, who wanted to pick up some albums, and she phoned me, very angry, and she was like, "I've been texting you for the past 3 days. Why haven't you answered?" I said, "I'm sorry, I don't have a text on my phone." And she said, "That is so irresponsible of you."
Wow.
Yeah, she's really angry. And I heard, I listened, I said, wow. And I said to her, wow, I appreciate, I'm sorry about that you've been upset by that. I said, but you should know that if we were sitting one-on-one together in my office, yeah, I'd be able to give you 100% of my attention. She shut up immediately. So you're so used to in a conversation with somebody, and we're just like that.
It's not as if you pick up a newspaper.
But it's much worse because this is something connected to you. So it's just like something you're talking to somebody, just like this, and then they come back to you. That's what it's like. I'm saying it doesn't begin. The avoidance. I'm sorry to like be to make everyone feel so uncomfortable, but it's impossible in my mind to. It's important. I understand how important it is to have these devices. But you have to work on many, if you can get rid of it, yeah, which, you know, or keep it in your office or something like that, which I have a smartphone in my office, yeah, and it stays off until I need to get like a text message from Google or something, you know, it stays off in my office. I don't bring it with me anywhere. I use this, especially with my family. That's the worst. It's just crazy. Imagine free. I'll tell you another story while we're on the topic, yeah. This is even more difficult. For people to hear.
More than the last story?
I'm going to leave. This is
the last story was enough.
This is a horrible story. I was taking pictures at Hasna. Must have been 6, 7, 8 years ago. I can't remember. 6, 7 years ago. I remember it was in Beit Shemesh. And the Hoss was a really put together good guy. Mamash a good guy, yeah? Really, you know. And we were taking family pictures. And of the Hassan side, and they're all there. And the dad had just moved to the side. I found out later he was giving someone directions. He wasn't checking his Facebook. He's giving someone directions on his phone. And this Hassan, in front, it was the immediate family. It wasn't like all the guests. It's just pictures at the beginning. This Hassan, again, a really put together guy. He just snapped. Not in an angry way, in an utterly broken way. He was like, Abba, please, please, it's my chasna, please put it away, please. And he was like tearing up. The father couldn't have got it in his pocket any quicker. And everybody there, their heart just like tore in half. There was just silence. That kid, L'Choira, had had parents with smartphones for his whole adolescent life. And everyone there saw the whole thing just come out. We can't even imagine that. Maybe, how old is the youngest person here? My parents didn't have smart when I grew up. We had the phone in the kitchen, you know? Imagine being second place to a piece of graphite. Second place always to a piece of graphite. That's pusher. That's crazy. What kind of trauma that does for a child? And again, we all saw it at this chasna. We all saw it at this chasna. I can't think of anything more important than to, at least when you're with your family and when you're out and about, to have just something like this as opposed to one of these telephones, because they're we don't even know. I tell you, I always think of it like this, like with smoking, you know cigarettes came out in like the mass smoking came out, like rolled cigarettes came out in the early 1900s, late 1800s, yeah. It wasn't until like the 1960s until everyone worked out that their mum was crazy bad for you. We had like 70 years of just, they're great. Doctors smoking here, I smoke Camel, smoke, you know. you see these people, their mind, the way the mind is going, you don't think that's going to lead to like crazy mental illnesses later in life and stuff like that? Forget the kids becoming second play, all this stuff. It's an important thing. I'm not coming to you from the side of, like the Kenosha, porn side. Yeah, everyone, anybody who's addicted to porn on their telephone or anything like that, they know more than anyone that it's the worst thing in the world. Yeah, but you don't need to talk to them. You just need to try and help them get out. But the more subtle trafe kite of it, I'll just give you another while we're on a roll. I'll give you another thing that is so destructive again that people don't talk about is the camera function of your telephone. The camera function of your telephone makes us turn everything into a means to an end. Wait, let me just get a picture of this. Well, what about the actual event? We get a picture of it for later. So what's the event? The event is just a means to an end that comes later on. That's called, if you want to really be technical with the terms, that's called chas v'shalom, that's called turning kedusha into klipa.
This came from a photographer.
Yeah.
That's why he's out.
You should see the camera on this thing. Yeah, it's like, you can print it.
It doesn't
like,
exist.
You can print it like that big.
It's only blurry. Well,
yeah. But that idea of taking pictures of everything.
Not present.
It's so trafe. To say not present isn't like strong enough because that's obvious, but it's actually turning a holy, and the more important the moment, the more the tither take the picture. So the more, you're a hustler, yeah, okay, take a picture. But the concept of not being there for being there right now and saving it for a time later, yeah, is actually turning that into a means to an end. It's really destructive. Okay, so that was us. We went off on one. So
was that the thing you wanted to discuss? That was going to be the tangent of 20 minutes.
No, that wasn't. That was Hashem's decision.
I'll be that guy. I really don't understand this entire entity.
Yeah, that's good. You shouldn't right now. We need to these ideas. We've been.
You've been building up to this over the last few weeks.
No, I'm assuming most people don't have much of an idea of what this is. The point is that these we haven't really built up. We have a little bit, but one of the biggest misconceptions with Hasidus and with Kabbalah as well, maybe not with Kabbalah, people don't really learn Kabbalah so much, but with Hasidus especially, is that Hasidus is just like Vortlach, like nice, cute, deep, profound ideas, yeah? But the idea of like having to build information, like go into a university level physics year class, you have no idea what's going on. Yeah, you have to go back to preschool and start little, whatever, not preschool. You have to just go back to school, and that's how knowledge works. Knowledge, what you in Kabbalah is called keys. Yeah, you have keys. Certain knowledge is keys to next level knowledge. But you could look at it, this is what we're talking about. Because Hashem is the idea of binyan, of building knowledge. So Chabad Chassidus specifically is a binyan, is such a binyan that is it's magnificent. But it takes a lot of time, and you have to build. So that's the answer to the question. So we've got these ten going back to the point. The Rebbe explains that the Nefesh Lakis mirrors the ten spheres that Hashem uses to create.
Mirrors?
Yeah, maybe mirror's not the right word. It devolves from, I'm not sure the right word, but it's based on that structure. And that's the structure of all of reality. All of reality works on that ten.
So also the Nefesh Bahamas.
Absolutely.
So it's holographic.
It's holographic, exactly. And each one of those 10 points also breaks down into 10 points, and each one of those 10 points breaks down, etc., etc., etc.
Something special, the Nefesh Shel Kis.
Well, that's what we're talking about here. That's how we're explaining it here. So it breaks down into two. We've got the what's called Seichel and Midas. Yeah, we've got the three spheres of the Seichel. Yeah, or we call it Koichas and Nefesh. We don't call them spheres. Spheres is what we refer to how Hashem relates to the world. But here we talk about Koichas and Nefesh. So you've got the 10 Koichas and Nefesh. The first three are called Seichel. Okay? That's That is Chabad, Chochma, Bina, Das. Okay? And then the next seven are called Midas, which you could translate as maybe emotions, which is Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchus.
How is Midas emotions?
How are Midas emotions? Okay, that's a good question. On one foot, and this is really. See, people love complex. The idea of emotions being so complex that, like, you can never, like, you know, you'll spend your whole life trying to unravel them, and you'll never get there. Yeah, but they're really not emotions. The technical term for emotions basically is an attraction towards or a repulsion away. That's what emotions are. So love is wanting to get close. And fear, if you want to call it that, is wanting to move away. That's all emotion. It's actually in the English word emotion. It's just a movement towards or movement.
Does Midas mean your fine points?
Well, Midas really means like measurements. But the Midas is cool. We call that the emotions. That's what we're gonna be using that word and emotions interchangeably. So
Malchus would be lumped into there also. Malchus would be one of these seven.
It is one of the seven. Malchus is the place where the emotions express themselves. That's really called behavior. Malchus is thought, speech, and action. So how does the seichel work? Okay, and we all know how the seichel works. The seichel, the genesis of the idea we call chochmah. Yeah, everyone's familiar with this idea. We have like the seed, like the germ of the idea, and then like the male gives the zera to the female. And then within the female, she gives length and breadth and depth to that seed. Yeah, so that's the relationship of Chochmah and Bina. Everyone knows that. It's the way I've learned it. When you get more technical, more granular, it's a little different. It's a little. There's a deeper side to it. Chochmah, really, you know, everyone knows that the Nakudas, the vowels, link up with the spheres. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So you've got 10 Nakudas and you've got 10 spheres. Comets goes with Kesa. Then Seire goes with Bina. Who knows what goes with? Patach goes with Chochmah. And that really is a big indication. There's a bunch of Pesukim. I'm not going to get into the Pesukim right now. But really, if you want to understand it really on a very technical level, what is Chochmah? Chochmah is just an open space to what's above it. What's above it is what's on Oynik. This is Chochmah is the top part of the seichel. So Chochmah is just like an open window that really allows light from above it to come through. That's on a more technical level. It's not a seed in a sense. That's not wrong. But to understand it a little bit deeper, and Chochmah you can look. You know, Chochmah is all about opening, all about being open. It's about bittul. Like I said, there's a bunch of pesukim as well.
Hillel Miparich gives the mashal about looking at a building.
Say again?
Hillel Miparich, right? He gives the mashal of looking at a building and seeing the beauty of the building and like the skira achas, like seeing everything all.
Yeah.
And then Bina would be seeing the particulars of architecture and why it's beautiful to you, like breaking it down into particulars.
Yeah. So that's another way of saying it. That when you talk about the germ, the seed, the whole Indian, you know, I give the example of like, you know, a big like property developer driving past some kind of like massive wasteland and he stops his car. He's like, wow. You just look at him and you realize he's now seeing this, you know, tremendous building that he's thinking of building. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's Chochmah. He sees it in, he doesn't see it in detail, but he sees the whole thing. He sees the whole thing.
Vision.
He has a vision. Yeah, exactly. He has a vision. And then he gets on the telephone and he calls up his people and it's okay, let's get this going. Now the people start calling the architects, they start calling the suppliers, they start calling the municipality, they start dealing with the details, yeah? That would be Bina. But this is still on a level, no building takes place. No actual physical building takes place. This is all intellectual, yeah? So you've got Chochmah and Bina. And you can't really separate them. Chochmah without Bina is called Zera Levatana. Bina without Chochmah has got nothing to work with. It's like Chochmah needs Bina to express itself, and Bina needs Chochmah to have something to express. You just can't separate them. That's why Abba and Imma are always in a zebra with each other. So that's Chochmah and Bina. And that's how our mind works always, and that's usually that's a very good way of learning the Gemara. Is, you know, you'll try and either get through the whole daf or through just read through the sugya and get a big chunk of that. And now you involve your Bina. The truth is that the learning of Gemara is very not Chochmah. It's very Bina dick. It's mamash Bina dick. Just an interesting thing I saw from Shimon Morgenstern. The difference between the Ashkenazi world and the Sephardi world is under the chuppah. Is in the Ashkenazi world, the kallah walks around the chassan. In the Sephardi minag is the chassan puts a talus over the chassan kallah, which is a profound symbol. Why? In the woman is bina, yeah. So in the Sephardi, in the Ashkenazi world, the bina goes around the chokhmah. The ikah is about bina. Yeah, in the Sephardi world, where it's more Bakias and more Kabbalah, etc., yeah, the chassan envelops the kallah. So it shows you shows that the minhagim are very, very deep.
The woman's the boss by the Sephardi. The woman's the boss by the Ashkenazim. That's really what that's indicating.
That's the Sephardi. No, that's not true. That's not true. The women are the boss in the Sephardi.
Even more so.
Steps on the foot.
I'm not joking.
It's
Minhag.
It's
Minhag
Sephardi.
Really?
Well, that's why
the
Ashkenazim
smash
the glass.
I've been to a lot of
hoopers.
I never
smashed the
glass.
We step on the glass, not on the foot.
Okay.
So
step on the glass.
I didn't do it.
The last time.
So this is a very helpful thing. This is a very helpful thing. Is we can translate Chochmah as it discovers the idea. That's a really good way of translating Chochmah. It discovers. Chochmah is the discoverer. Yeah, Bina is the developer. Develops the idea. So what's Das? Anyone knows what Das is?
It's the one who executes.
The workers that come and put it all together.
That's the only thing.
Das is still, there's no building takes place in Das. It's the birth, you could say it's the birth of the intellectual idea. But definitely not the builders happen down in Malchus. That's all the way down at the bottom.
It's the plan, it's like the final plan.
It's the signing of the thing that we're going.
Maybe, you could maybe say that.
Once everything's running.
So Das is
the operation of the Seichel?
Is what?
Is it the Ratzon of the Seichel people?
I don't know. But the Pasha way of understanding it is that Das is your faculty that identifies with the idea. And we're going to talk about this a lot, because this is Kodesh Kodeshim, to understand what it means to identify. What does it mean to identify something? What does it mean on a technical level, a mechanical level? What?
Connected to it.
Yeah. Can you say more?
There's a relationship between two different parts of the same thing.
Okay.
You get upset about it.
Yeah. These are all expressions of what happens when you have das. But what really is the essence? What?
Understanding?
You think your life is like taloy on it?
That's very close. The word is merging. Your sense of self and X merge. That's das. Das is where you become the idea. Not just you have the idea, you are the idea. So you're like, what do you mean I am the idea? I'll tell you an idea that you are. Yeah, you are an idea. 2 times 2 equals 4. You don't have that idea. You are that idea. That makes up a fiber in the fabric of your human soul. Because you run your life by that calculation. That's part of your outlook on reality. 2 times 2 equals 4. That's part of your soul. So when you know something with das, you stop quoting the idea. Like, you never think of quoting, you know, your third grade teacher when you explain to your kid that 2 times 2 equals 4. Why not? You know, shame Oimroy, you know, maybe Geula. Why not say, you know, so I heard from my teacher that 2 times 2 equals 4. Why don't you say that? Because it's yours.
You own it already.
It's yours. Exactly. That's like the idea. I give a nice example of, there's an idea. I'm a big fan of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the ideas he gives there is this idea of dealing with your employees as making them feel that they are and in a real way, not in a manipulative way, that they're the boss. They have their own business that exists within your company. They don't work for you in a sense. They work for themselves, and they've got a department in your business. Like, there's you know, probably millions of firms that actually are not part of Amazon, that work for Amazon or Google, you know, whole businesses that are, they're independent businesses, but if Google was to go down, they would immediately vanish. They don't have any other clients. So if you can impart that idea over to your employee, and the best way of doing that is by constantly saying to them, you're the boss, and I'm here to help. And, you know, ask me for, I've done this so I know the ropes a little bit, but I want you really to create your own processes and et cetera, et cetera. If you can really make them feel that they're, yeah, then that's the idea. So I've lived with that idea for probably, you know, 10, 15 years. I don't need to quote that in the name of Stephen Covey anymore. I just, that idea is just real to me. That's who I am. You with me? Any idea that's just, that's how you see reality, that means that idea entered into your das. So now, if let's say, for example, yeah, anybody here right now involved in some kind of project that you could, some kind of work project that you could summarize in one or two or three words?
We're going to be doing a fundraiser if you're here.
So fundraiser. Yeah. Fundraiser, great, perfect example,
nice.
Yeah?
Good job.
So you, so now, you've been involved in this now, you're about to, you've, it's not just a new idea, it's been, you've already moved vital into this idea, yeah? So you're in it, like right now, yeah? So this idea is probably in your dust. If you went out tonight with your wife, you're married, yeah? If you went out tonight with your wife for a meal, and you're sitting there, and the people on the table next to you, and you heard the guy there say fundraiser, or even what you're going to be using a program?
Yeah, Cause Match.
What was it called?
Cause Match.
Cause Match. If you hear the guy next to you say Cause Match, yeah, what would you do?
There's a synergy between what you're doing and what he's doing.
But what would be the actual physical...
Hello, what are you doing?
You would turn your head towards... Yeah. You would turn your head in that direction. Just like in the exact same way if someone called your name.
If you identify with that word.
Yeah. If you've identified with that name and someone says that, yeah, you will turn as if they just said Shmuel. I mean, you wouldn't turn if they said Shmuel. I would turn. There you go. So when they say Shmuel, you would be like that. In the exact same way, like the example I give is for years, I don't care about it anymore, but I use Canon cameras for all my life, yeah? So someone says Canon or 2470, you know, or 5D Mark IV, you like that, yeah? It's like they just called your name. That means you and that Indian are merged with each other, like your football club. Someone says, whatever, Manchester United, yeah? And that's your club, you'll turn around, just like they said Shmuel, just like they said your name. That's called Das. That's when something goes into Das. So how do you get an idea into Das? And again, it's graphic, I'm sorry, but it's really the friction between Chochma and Bina that gives birth to Das, or gets the idea into Das. However you can say, I like that there's a lot of ways of talking about it. My favorite one is the idea that an idea goes into your Das. I look like Das is like a box inside me, which is me. Yeah, that's the me. And then the idea goes in there. Now, so I always like to use that expression if it goes into Das. And that's all people got called, all kinds of cool different expressions for it. Yeah.
But you don't want things in there, do you?
No.
You don't have any ideas you want in there. You just want one thing in there, don't you?
No. I mean, you also want your 2x table in there. Like, well, you can't really help that. Like, anything that's true falls into Das. If an idea that isn't true falls into Das, yeah, I think that from what I know, I think that the extraction of that is called Gehenna.
Extraction of what?
If a false idea falls into your Das, I think that the cleansing process of that is called Gehenna.
But there's some...
Isn't it just distraction?
Think about that.
That's about associating and identifying.
There's different ideas. There's like...
Shmuel, this could easily be identifying things. I mean, if you're at a stoplight and someone walks by and touches your car or whatever, like I'm, like you're like, hey, people, you'll react to someone touching your car the way that like
you
identify to touching me.
Except it's real.
Oh, for sure, it's with Drake. Yeah,
so we gotta identify with the car. But the car is me.
When you unravel it,
if you get very angry, there's Madragas. So, what's your name?
Moshe.
So, just to, it's kind of the same thing, is that there's levels and levels to Das. There's ideas that you are absolutely identified with, and then there's ideas that you're semi-identified with, and there's ideas that you're hardly identified with, and there's ideas that you're not identified with. So, it's a broad spectrum, but the if a false idea actually enters into Das in a real way, yeah, that needs to get worked out.
What determines what's true and false?
Reality.
Like if you're doing it with true and false,
no
identity.
Isn't it to some extent there are subjective ideas?
What if somebody lived their life as a Dominist? What if someone lived their entire life as a Dominist, believing Dominism? Believing Dominism.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, right before he died, someone goes, by the way, your entire life that you lived was totally wrong. Everything you did, every action you took, because it's not true. So that's, I think, is the Gehenna part. It wasn't you unravel your whole life. What was in Das is no longer, it's inappropriate. You got to get it back out.
So I don't know like how it works is it true, is gravity true, is there a concept of gravity?
There's certain ideas in the world that are objective, but there are other things that are not.
So if we are identified with an opinion, so you're talking that's not a fact, that's an opinion, yeah. If it's not objective, it means that's my opinion. I feel like this,
yeah,
you feel like
you
that. It's a good thing. Trump is a good thing for the
great,
for the United,
yeah,
States.
And I can identify with that very,
yeah,
deeply.
So that would be something. Simulation. Oh, yeah. That's it.
Great.
That would be not a good thing to identify with. I'll change it a little bit. This is, you can identify with that as long as at the drop of the hat you're able to disidentify from that. There's not really a problem being identified with these ideas. The problem of being identified with these ideas is when something more true comes in the way. Like, for example, to think that you're God, yeah? Which nearly all of us do. Because if you didn't think you were God, you wouldn't be able to do an Aveira. That ability to go against Ratzon and Hashem, this is really the crux of the idea of Gehenna. Is identifying with the fact that you are something unto yourself. That you are not a part of a big system. That you look at we identify with ourselves as an independent entity. Yeah, separate from reality. That's going to be Gehenna, getting that cleansed out of us. We are part of a big system. Oh, well, that means you're nothing. No, absolutely not. You're an intrinsic cog in a cosmic, unimaginable system. And without that cog, the whole thing falls to pieces, literally. It's like you've ever seen one of those like fancy Patek Philippe watches, what they call complex. Those watches called complex, where you look at the back, it's like endless cogs and stuff. What?
Complications, right.
Is that what they're called, yeah?
Yeah, they're called like big complications.
So every one of those cogs are intrinsic to the entire system. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't saying you're nothing, this is saying you're an intrinsic part of everything. As opposed to me, I just feel like I'm this big cog. Could be here, could be there. Like, what are you then? You're nothing. It's the irony of it. It's push at the irony. You know what I mean?
Right now you're describing, sounds like the purest, like what the deepest, the highest level of Das, right?
Well, that's what you want in your, that's really the real idea that you're trying to get into your Das. Is to understand that I am a...
Like there's only... In that sense, there should only be one thing in Das.
Maybe.
But,
right. Maybe. That's kind of what I'm trying to understand. It's like when you were saying, let's say, with the fundraising idea, so he then almost identifies with the word cause match or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then he's like that. You know, in some way to look at that is that he's almost overly identified because that's taken him away from his he's out to eat with his wife in the middle of a conversation. Well,
if that's the point, if that identification overrides any mitzvah or causes him to do any aveira,
right?
Yeah. Now that's called Elohim Acherim.
That's called
That he's now related to himself as something separate from reality. Whereas to have that relation, you can't avoid. Look, you've sat there for 3 weeks pulling this big fundraiser together. Yeah, you know you've just been looking at this word Chesed fund for like, you know, 80 hours. The guy next to you says Chesed fund. You're like that,
right?
But that's not a problem until it becomes a steerer to Ratz on Hashem.
Right?
You with me? This is the important part. That's what I said. So it's really not such a problem being identified with X. Like, enjoy your football club. That's fine. But the minute you start taking it seriously to the point where it actually, that would be called an avodah zarah, where it now is fighting with Hashem for dominance, that would be called avodah zarah.
Is that an issue with the Chachmah Rabina, or it's just within the Das?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's ever. I mean, it's because of the Hochman Bina. Hochman Bina, there couldn't be dust without Hochman Bina.
How you address it, right? Meaning, if it's a problem within the Chachmah or the Bina, which then is contained within the dust,
it's not really a problem. But it's the problem is the Chachmah and the Bina is the relationship was so strong between the Chachmah and Bina. The problem's the idea.
Right.
The thing is false. The thing is not a real thing. So now to get related, so now to identify with this idea and part of the mitzvah, you've been mekadosh the whole thing. Yeah, like you should be. We could literally talk about dust for a very, right, very long time. But I want to get to this point. This is the point. So, yeah? Because again, there's all these interesting sideways we can go, but there's also the like it would be a waste of time in a sense. So. Dust gives birth to emotion. That's the important point. Why? Because dust is where you, your sense of self and the idea, where your sense of self and the idea merge with each other. So you can appreciate the phrase, I love you. Yeah? How would you say that in regards to understanding that two times two equals four? What's the difference between 2 times 2 equals 4 and I love you?
Emotion.
One is subjective.
I love you is subjective.
One is not.
2 times 2 is 4
can
will
change.
Exist a long time after I die. Yeah? My love for X, when I die, let's say, goes. Meaning, it's my love. It doesn't exist without me. 2 times 2 equals 4 is completely objective. It has nothing to do with me whatsoever. 2 times 2 equals 4 has as much to do with me as it does with you, with you, with you, with you. It has exactly the same thing with all of us. It's completely objective. That's seichel. That's knowing something is seichel. It's just nothing to do with me.
My relationship with 2 times 2 equals 4 is in some ways same as the I love you.
No.
Meaning the idea of love is a global concept.
That's das. That means the 2 times 2 equals 4 fall into your das. Someone turns around to you and says 2 times 2 equals 6. No,
right.
Isn't.
Right.
There will be you there.
Right.
You understand? You'll take it personally. Like, it will become a personal thing. Have you ever tried to argue with a guy who was saying the most ridiculous thing?
I mean,
it's just absolutely absurd. And you're like, why do I need to? This is ridiculous.
Right.
Like in that book, in Reclaiming Sanity, it says, you know, there's an argument. Some guy's saying sound is faster than light. Yeah? How can people get so incensed over? You hear people get incensed over arguments. Yeah?
What's the difference between somebody who gets incensed and somebody who doesn't get incensed? It's still just true. It's not. If you say 2 plus 2 is 6, it doesn't bother me. I mean, there's nothing wrong with you.
It
doesn't
bother me.
What?
It doesn't bother me.
Oh, it does?
Let's make it a little bit more painful.
He's a businessman. It's almost saying 2 plus 2 is 6. You're this businessman. It doesn't make any sense.
You're not going to do business.
Or he'll just stop talking.
But then lose his business. I'm saying something is.
Oh, so if you're involved in it, you have to iron that out. You have to re-educate.
Like around
but, But this is what happens. What happens when there's a machlokes? Yeah, this is worth. This is worth. It's worth just hearing this for the whole shift. This is just one thing you're gonna walk away with. This is the thing worth walking away from. Walking away with. Nearly always, until you become very, very present, very aware, very conscious, very elevated, nearly always, a machlokes between two people is about me and you, not about what we're discussing bichlal. That's what it's about. Why? Because I've identified with the speed of sound, you've identified with the speed of light. Now you're trying to kill me. By telling me that I'm wrong is actually you trying to kill me. Why? Because I am one with the speed of sound, with the idea that I'm trying to, I've become one with sound being faster than light. Yeah? I've become one with that. Now you're telling me that's not the case. You're literally, it's like, if I admit that, it will be like experiencing death.
You shouldn't exist.
Exactly. It will be like experiencing death. It's like we spoke about the tither. Remember the idea of having a tither? Right. Where you've identified with the tither. So there's now not me and a tither. There's just a tither. So you're angry. You're fuming, yeah? There's just anger. And someone says, calm down, relax. So
there's a difference between something being true and then identifying with it.
Like, yeah, sure.
You can hold something to be true, but it doesn't mean it's like you've identified
with it. You don't need to
identify.
Yeah,
it's as true
as
you...
And you want to be, you want to have a good life, then only identify with the most... important things you need to identify with, like your children, your wife, you know, the Torah, and not your take on the Torah.
Get angry at my
what?
I only get angry at my children.
Identify. Well, you should get angry at somebody else is unpleasant to your children. Always take the side of your children. That's a good tip. Also, always take the side of your employer as well. It's another good tip. So the goal, look, you can't avoid identification, you just can't avoid it, yeah? But the kunz is that you're playing the game and it's not playing you, meaning you're able to turn around when someone says something horrible about Manchester United and now, you know, you feel the anger rise and you're like, how dare you? Should know 1984, we should, you know, whatever it is, yeah? And then all it becomes is just a battle of two created beings trying to exist, fighting to the death. It's literally, when you strip away the graphics, it's two entities trying to survive. That's what nearly all of our machlokesim are. Nearly all of them. It's a hard thing to hear, but it's very, but it's really liberating, because now you're in a position to, you know, when your wife says X to you. And now she's like, can't believe she just went there. I can't believe she went there. You know, like in regards to me, you know, that's just not to say that. Yeah, but you realize that she's actually trying to hurt you. Yeah, that's why she went there, because you did something to her. Maybe she and you tried to hurt her. And the minute you realize that, you can diffuse the whole thing. Like literally, I had this Shabbos. I had a lovely story with my 8-year-old girl, my 15-year-old girl. And I said this, I give so many shirim, I don't know like where I say stuff. I said this somewhere. But it was such a lovely story. It sounds not, but you'll hear. That my 15-year-old girl, as 15-year-olds are with their younger siblings, is like, fire. Get this. What are you doing? Why are you so stupid, Danny? You know, very hard, you know, very hard on their younger children. And... So my 8-year-old, who's a very clever girl, we had this random guest stay in our house who was a little bit, maybe not 100%, I don't know what was with her emotionally or whatever. And my younger daughter told this girl that my older daughter hates her. Yeah? So my older daughter, this is on Friday night, yeah? So my older daughter comes back crying her eyes out. I can't believe that she said this and now it's terrible and this girl's all angry with me and she's chatting, she won't talk to me. She's going, no, no. And it was a whole mess. I'm like, wow, what'd you do? Like, hey, you shouldn't have done that, you know? That's terrible. That's terrible. So anyway, it was late at night, so everyone fell asleep eventually. I davened and I came back the next morning after davening. And I took Elisheva and Esther to the kitchen and I sat them there like a basedin kind of thing. I was the basedin. And I turned to Elisheva. I said, that is absolutely unacceptable. I told you this, yeah, that's what I said. I said it's absolutely unacceptable to create machloikus and sina amongst Yidden is the worst thing you can do. It's absolutely unacceptable. It's terrible. Mum was terrible. And you can see she's kind of squirming, yeah? And my older daughter's like sitting there like with a smile. And then after enough of that, I turned around and said, but Esther, I understand exactly why she did that. And now the little one started to smile and my older one started to squirm. And I said, this is just what happens. If you treat someone, and then I kept going back and said, this doesn't mean that you're allowed to do that, chas v'shalom. But if you treat someone in the way that you treat her, this is going to happen. There's no way around this. She saw an opportunity to hurt you back. She's much smaller than you. She can't treat you like you're treating her. So she's a clever girl, and she took the opportunity, and she mamash hurt you. And Esther really understood that. And Elisheva really understood that. And I said to Esther, like, why don't you try and talk to her a little more, you know, little nicer. Talk to her nicely. I said, yeah, but she's always that. Nah, nah, nah. And I said to Isha, why don't you try and help her talk to you a little more nicely? And this was on Shabbos. And last night, this bit you didn't hear. Last night, Esther turned around to me and said, Abi, you want some nachas? I was like, okay. She said, me and Elisha, we just went out for an ice cream just now. The whole thing, just literally, it can flip around so quickly. If you just become cognizant of what the problem is, just stop. Just be aware of it. That don't identify. That's called, in Loshana Tanya, that's called being Masiach Das. Masiach Das means to disidentify from the idea. If you can be Masiach Das, it doesn't just mean to distract yourself. It means to actually extricate yourself, extract yourself from the idea. Yeah? Then you're in an amazing position to just actually, you know, to turn around everything. Really, a really privileged position. Well, you would never think that was actually in, all of this was in that chapter. And we missed out some stuff as well. But that also, so let me just finish off quickly, that is, so now when we identify with the idea, because I have become involved, before the identification with the idea, there's no me involved in the idea, just 2 + 2 = 4, yeah? That's just, as like we said, it's the same to me as it is to you. But once I've gone weiter into the idea, and I've, the Chochmah and Bina have been working with each other, yeah? Which is primarily, and again, this is uncomfortable for people, but I primarily, the avoider of Das is Chazara. That's really where Das is born, through Chazara, going over the ideas again and again and again and again. The opposite of how YouTube works. So YouTube, when you finish the video, you swipe to the next one, or even Torah anytime. You know, how often did you listen to the same video twice? Yeah, that's not how it's meant to be. If you hear a good video, if you hear something worth listening to, then that was just, on my mission statement I have, if a book was worth reading once, it was worth reading twice. And if it was worth reading twice, it was worth reading four times, etc. I live by that. You should see the books in my house, the real books are torn to pieces. That's how these ideas become you when you're not quoting anyone. I don't need to quote my Rebbe anymore. Maybe we'll finish on this idea. And it's just my own chiddush, but I think it's cute. You'll like it. It's a cute chiddush. What's the last one of the 48 ways? Last one of 48 ways are the Hoime Dava B'Shem Oimroi. Halamadata Shekol Hoime Dava B'Shem Oimroi Mevi Geula L'Oilam. It brings Geula to the world when you quote it in the name. And again, this is just my cute chiddush, is when you quote it in the name of someone, it just brings Geula, but it's not the Geula. The Geula is when you don't need to quote anybody anymore. when you don't, not that you shouldn't quote them like a nice thing. How do you say that? A nice thing.
Yeah. I think it's good. It's also good for you to quote them.
Yeah, anyway, it's good for you. But you're not. That's the when the idea. That's the geula of the idea. The idea's had a geula because it's come part. It's become part of it. Yeah. That's so. It's, I think it's Maram is in the final one of the 48 ways. Yeah, is that the ideas that are worth having, which are really what we're talking about right now, and real Torah ideas. These are ideas that are worth becoming part of your mamash. And I've spent the past, 15 odd years with these ideas, obsessively, and you can hear I'm not quoting my Rebbe, even though everything is b'shem my Rebbe. I hope that these ideas, and then once you understand it with das, once the idea falls into your das, now you see it from this idea, from this place, or from this place. And that was one of the reasons this book we put out, Reclaiming Sanity, that there's copies available for people if people want over there. But when you read books, you'll hear ideas that are in a completely different language, and you'll immediately recognize the idea. But wow, how do you know that? That's amazing. That's in Tanya. That's the third Perek of Tanya. Why? Because you've gone beyond the letters, and you've actually gone into the concept mamash, which is beyond letters. Like 2 times 2 equals 4, you could say shtayim kaful shtayim shave arba. I don't know any other languages, yeah? But you could say that in endless languages. So what's the connection to the actual words and the concept? It's arbitrary. The actual letters are arbitrary. The concept, everybody in the world understands 2 times 2 equals 4 in the same way, no matter what language you speak. That's called going beyond language. That's really the safe. We'll talk about more next week. Okay.
So is there language in the safe? There must be language.
Not maybe a chachma.